And this is the hour we take your calls. It's called Conversations with Linda. And the way things are looking, the lines are lighting up fast. And welcome back to Coast, Conversations with Linda. Linda's with us, of course. Linda, what projects are you working on these days?
Oh, gosh. So
you never stop.
Yeah, so many different ones. And the praying mantis and the soul transfer and that so-called resurrection technology is part of something that I'm going to be sharing at the Conscious Life Expo also
in February. Yeah, lots to do that
month. Later, you're going to be there too. But
yeah.
In the 90-minute workshop that I'm going to do, Highest Strangeness in Human Abductions, it is like looking at a big fan of facets in the abduction syndrome that fascinate me now, because we have more lens looking back over all of these different types of experiences, and I'm beginning to see patterns that I didn't see before. And I think it is very important that people be able to feel like that they can talk to somebody like me, who has interviewed a tremendous number of people in this difficult abduction syndrome, and then be able to share experiences, whether on the record with their real name or not. And I think that the more people do, the more all of us can share in what I think is a phenomena that is very important to understanding some kind of an alien presence on this planet. And that is one of the great values of Conscious Life Expo and the Alien Snowfest in Big Bear, is that we come together and we can share some of this material that you do not get on the 6 o'clock news or very rarely anywhere else. And people need that ability to feel secure in being able to share. So I hope to see a lot of you in both Big Bear and in Los Angeles at the LAX Hilton, not far from the airport.
That's right.
Where we will be at the Conscious Life Expo, and there will be a lot, I think, of deep substance.
Are you sensing that people are more aware of the presence of possible ETs than maybe the past few years?
People are speaking more frankly than I've ever heard them. It used to be where it was very difficult to get people to say anything, even if it was not on the record. And now I am sensing and feeling in my work every day that more and more really serious people, doctors, bankers, lawyers, merchant chiefs, as they used to say. I mean, people who have had substantial careers, and they've always had this secret. And the secret has been about the light in their room, the buzzing sound, moving through a wall, and feeling like if they ever said to another human being that when I was 12 years old, I moved right through the wall, out a window, I could see the trees, and I went up into a craft, people don't want to say those words in public and have their name attached, because they think that means they're crazy. Well, from my point of view, having interviewed about 1,500 people over the last 35 years, there are patterns of descriptions that you begin to realize, no, people are actually having these experiences, just like GS in that meditation. People are being transported from a car, from a field, from a bedroom, from wherever, and that it has happened in a way that is not, I think, literally three-dimensional Earth life.
Right.
And when Linda Porter said that she got the clear impression from the praying mantis that the travel was through, and these were her words written down, interdimensional tunnels. And we know that quantum physicists today, that there are all kinds of efforts to understand, even at CERN, can we access another dimension at the subatomic level? And so that is beginning to come out in straightforward scientific headlines. Well, in the abduction syndrome for 30, 40 years, they've been talking about this concept of non-human advanced technologies that can move point to point by bending space-time and travel through dimensional tunnels. Once you're in that kind of a landscape, then the idea that somebody can move through a wall means that something has happened at the atomic level, but it doesn't mean it's impossible. It means that, like Michio Kaku would say, that we're dealing with perhaps advanced civilizations, three, that harvest energy from suns, that they can literally control Planck's constant, maybe in the separation in the subatomic levels. And if you can do that, you can pass through walls, you can pass through anything. And that is the level at which so many cases of the human abduction go and fascinate me, because I think humans have been trying to translate these experiences from being with alien intelligences, no matter what their shape and size, that seem to have had an interaction with our planet much longer than humans have been alive on Earth. So Earth has some role to play, whether it is genetic mixing and matching, or as a maybe a sub, an interdimensional subway stop that a lot of non-humans use, and that the value of being able to talk on Coast and at earthfiles.com and at conferences is we have a whole subset of humans that have had experiences and they're struggling to come up with language that they can talk to other human beings about without being dismissed, without being called crazy. That is not fair. There is a phenomena, and the more we can share straightforwardly, I think the healthier it is for everyone.
The theories that abound out there about ETs, Linda, are that they're coming from other planetary systems, they're coming from other dimensions, that they may be coming from the inner Earth, or that they're time travelers. Which one do you subscribe to the most?
All of the above.
You do?
Oh, yeah. And I think that when I had it was the interview with the attorney that was involved with the break-in at Watergate, and that he had had exposure through E. Gordon,
Liddy.
It wasn't E. Gordon Liddy,
or
it was
E. Howard Hunt.
And that he said that the big secret was that there was an alien presence on this planet, and JFK had been exposed to it and wanted to open up the whole story, and that's why he was assassinated. I've heard that before. Jim Mars has heard that before.
Yeah. Bizarre story.
And
no doubt, right?
The phrase alien presence implies a presence on this planet, and I think that you have to go underground. And once you are underground, whether you're here or all kinds of planets on various solar systems, it's logical that a lot of Earth of life would go underground in various planetary systems, depending upon the suns, the solar radiation, the magnetic fields. So remember the interview with Helen Luttrell, who was the co-author with Jean Bilodeau of Rachel's Eyes about the hybrid in Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a U.S. Air Force colonel story. And then Anthony Sanchez's UFO Highway, another story about hybrids at Dulce. And in both, the common denominator was that our government had knowledge of non-humans underground in this planet from World War II on, and that there was collaboration in Dulce and collaboration at an underground facility between Area 51 and the town of Rachel. Underground, large, where we were trying to deal with and understand a hybrid presence on this planet, hybrid human and ET. What nobody seems to be able to fully answer in either of these stories is how and why would extraterrestrials on this planet use humans as a hybrid? Well, the only logical answer is, going back to that briefing paper that I was exposed to in 1983, working on that Home Box Office documentary, is that the evolution of standing up primates on this planet going back at least 2 million years was instigated and provoked by an alien presence that manipulated genes in already evolving primates. That would explain why 2 million years later that the same types of non-humans would be interested in harvesting genetic material from the current day Earth life, because they are the common thread on the planet. The non-humans are. Homo sapien or Homo sapiens sapien would be a modern standing up primate that was put in to evolution by non-humans. And therefore, once you begin to look at it from that point of view, you can say the alien presence has been here much longer than humans. Therefore, if it has been involved in the manipulation of DNA in already evolving primates, then its interest in use of genetic material on Earth now is because it has been here for a long time mixing and matching genes, and it may have a survival problem. That is what came up in both the Rachel Eyes and UFO Highway, that we're dealing with non-humans. They may be advanced with technologies, but they may have bodies that have survival problems, and that may be a big issue in this universe.
All right, now we go to the phones. Mike is in Cleveland, Ohio, and on Coast to Coast now. Hey, Michael, go ahead.
Good evening, Linda and George.
Hi, Mike.
Two things I could quickly relate. Faster than Bill from Hartford, George. Linda, in 1991, a perfect Sriantra formed in the Oregon Desert, which you could Google, comprised of 13 miles of lines in a desert dry kiln baked ground.
Yeah, I remember it.
It wasn't perfect at ground level and had arborations built into it that compensated for the curvature of the earth and looked perfect when viewed from above, and also crop formations also seem pressed in. And second, Terence McKenna made prominent, which you could Google, the Tassili cave art, The Bee Shaman, which shows mushrooms jutting out the side of its body. And if I could say, on high doses of mushrooms, I experienced one time a bee in a dark room that was nose-to-nose with me. It had the big alien eyes and an immense insect presence. It's what guides my shamanic dance, and it told me that bees were the dolphins of the insect community, and I would just say that clearly insects are older than humans.
Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting. I've probably had discussions with maybe 100 people in the last 3.5 decades about the praying mantises. They're not as common by any stretch as the greys or the Nordics, but they do come up. And in those discussions, the one common denominator that everybody has is that the praying mantis communicates a sense of being, this was one of the phrases I've heard, as old as our solar system, designed specifically by another galaxy, galactic civilization, to oversee the evolution and seeding of life in solar systems, and that in that age, in that ancientness of the praying mantis, they feel tremendous sadness coming from the praying mantis toward the human about the human life, as if the praying mantis understands the whole gigantic process of the birth of the sun and the creation of the solar system its role in planting life, the experimentations, and mistakes. They do make mistakes. And that is maybe the most haunting question that we could face right now on a planet that is changing so rapidly, is drowning in violence and in climate change. Did somebody make a mistake in what they did with setting in motion the standing up primates on this planet without having the ability to ensure that the soul in the containers that were made would have a chance to prevail over a body, physical violence that seems to dominate in the Homo sapien? That is a very interesting physical, philosophical, and biological question about the human creatures that we are on planet Earth now. It may have been a mistake.
Let's go to Robert in Baltimore, Maryland now. Hey, Robert, let's get you in here.
George, I want to tell you that both you and Linda, in what you're doing, is so valuable to the country.
Thank you.
Because it is really supporting disclosure.
Thank you.
Because you can see disclosure as the MJ-12 wanting to have disclosure to some degree, but they can't tell everybody everything, and they can't tell everybody even a little bit, because if they do, it will lead to everything wanting to come out. So the only thing they can do, really, is to tell a few people, take a limited audience and tell them everything, which is what you people are doing. And I think you are probably being allowed to do it, because so many other stations have been blocked from discussing it. But you're being allowed to do it because you're doing it the right way. You're telling a limited audience and hoping that as time goes on, that it will spread slowly and the public will not be overwhelmed. But I do want to ask Linda three quick questions,
yeah,
if I might. Number one is, if there are 1,000 contactees or abductees in the world that have communicated with ETs and that are not under military secrecy, why is there not some organization set up for them to pool their messages so that you, Linda, do not have to be talking to 1,000 people, but there is an organization that brings these people together and tries to assimilate the message? Now, my second question is
denial.
Let's let you answer that first, Linda.
Denial, the policies of denial politically interfere with people getting on the same page. It has been divide and conquer since World War II. Counterintelligence is very good at that. Every time that there have been organizations that might have gained some strength, they are always divided. Individuals, it happens politically in among investigators. People are always divided and attack, and that is why there is no unified organization.
We'll get your other two questions, Robert, when we come back after the break. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, Jimmy Church filling in for me. It's one of the last few days I'll be taking off this year. We've got double duty for you next weekend, live on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day night, and then also the same thing on New Year's Eve and New Year's Day night as well. So we're going to be doing all of that. But Jimmy will be filling in for me tomorrow to enjoy a little holiday weekend. And we're going to come back in a moment with Linda Bolton Howe. Okay, welcome back with Linda Moulton, our final segment here. And Linda, let's go back to Robert in Baltimore, Maryland. Robert, you had a couple more questions. Go ahead.
Linda, first I do want to compliment you. The summary you gave about 10 minutes ago on the state of the extraterrestrial picture was a wonderful summary and a wonderful comprehensive view of that. I would have asked you a question about that, but you did a wonderful job of pulling that together. But my two questions are this. Number one is, if we have mastered gravitic propulsion, why is NASA risking the lives of astronauts in chemical rockets and wasting hundreds of millions of taxpayer dollars building them? And you could say they ask the same question about the Russians. And the second question, if you'd like to hear that first, is, if zero-point energy devices had been built and operated and then confiscated by the U.S. Military, and the inventors threatened to keep silent. Why have rogue nations and inventors elsewhere not built them?
These are two sides of the same coin, I think. There's the famous story about Mr. Rutan at Lockheed, I think, saying that we had 25 years ago, we had the ability to take E.T. home, was the famous story.
Mm-hmm.
And the underbelly of that sentence is that all of the advanced technologies back engineered from alleged extraterrestrial technologies have been in a black world under black budgets, black money, completely out of the white world. And it is as if there are parallel human Earths now, one that is involved with the black world, the advanced technologies, and that if they may take them to Mars, and Mars will be the back door now from Earth, assuming that they think that Earth is in a lot of trouble and that there's going to be a population that goes to Mars now. Newsweek or Time just did an article about the one percenters are now going to get away from Earth and go to Mars, this freeze-dried planet that they will somehow make come alive. And so the 1% with all the money and the power will go to Mars, and Earth will be left with global climate change and death and war and migration. I mean, when you think about it in those hard black and white terms, that could be what is underneath all of this, then the technologies that could perhaps save our planet are being kept from us because they would prove that we could neutralize gravity, that we didn't need to use fossil fuels and explosions in rockets. All of this technology that allegedly is extraterrestrial, and that we have back-engineered some or a lot of it, and that your questions go to the heart of why are those technologies not being presented to the world and letting the chips fall where they may and say, we're sorry, we have developed all of this, we have back-engineered, we did not think that the planet and humans could take the truth, that we're not alone in this universe, and that there have been advanced intelligences terraforming this planet, mixing and matching genes, and if we told you, we assumed that everybody would fall apart. And I don't think that's true. I think that the human family needs to be told all of the truth that the power grid knows, and that the technologies that they're hiding behind the wings from their enemies, perceived enemies in war, and their perceived enemies in space, if it were all out in the open, the entire planet might change to something that would be less violent and warring.
And the other question he had too, Linda, he was talking about technology and why other nations haven't developed things. Look, we went to the moon 46 years ago, and nobody's been able to do that yet.
Well, the statement is on some of the whistleblowers that we and nobody has gone to the moon because extraterrestrials have dominated, owned, and operated from inside the moon for millennia, and that we were warned off. That is the statement. Those words are used. We were warned off away from the moon, and if that is true, it would explain this big gap. But there appears to be inertia moving forward now to get countries back on the moon, to Mars, and the rush to get to Mars that includes the NASA Help Wanted advertisement that came up on a NASA website just a week ago, that they are now actively seeking astronauts willing to be trained not just for Moon and Earth, but to go to Mars. And I think that it's pretty clear to everyone that anybody going to Mars, it is a one-way trip, probably.
Well, indeed it is. Let's go to Kevin now in Illinois. Kevin, welcome to the program. Go ahead.
Good morning, George. I appreciate you taking my call.
Thank you, Kevin.
And you know me as Kevin from La Mesa.
Oh,
I was on
okay.
the USS San Bernardino.
That's right.
The hospital Corbin.
That's right.
And, of course, you happen to be talking about praying mantises tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what my abduction experience was with. What I would like to ask Linda is if she's ever interviewed anybody who has described 12 to 15 feet tall, eggshell white praying mantises.
Yes, as a matter of fact. And it's so interesting because the eggshell color versus the green color, in my mind, I've often wondered if it had something to do with metabolism. I don't know. I have at Earth Files right now in the report on GS from Toronto, I have included a hot link to an Earth Files that I did back in 2007, quite fascinating, where there are photographs of what appears to be a tall, lanky, praying mantis type creature, and there's actually in photos. They were sent to me, and I did that report in 2007, and there's a link now from my GS report to that report with the photos. And the person who sent me the photographs, as often is the case, the people who are really serious, they don't want to be public. They don't want an interview. They just want to send photos and say, this is what happened, this is the story. And I wondered if you think this could be extraterrestrial. And in this case, the question was that they thought that they were looking at something that reminded them of a praying mantis, and the color is not green, it is eggshell. So that's in this report that you could go to Earth Files, go to my GS report, tonight, and the link is there to that 2007 story with the photos.
Great. Thank you, Kevin. Praying mantis stories seem to be everywhere, Linda.
It's very interesting to me because if you take the percentages of types described out of 1,000 or 1,500 people, and I have only had 100, was that a real ratio, or is it because people who have had interactions with praying mantises are so freaked out, are so afraid that it sounds so crazy that will be the least described, when in fact the praying mantises might have a more active interaction with humans than any of us know. I would like to hear from people tonight who may have had firsthand interactions either in conscious beta, meaning when you're awake and it's noontime and you encounter a praying mantis at a barn on a farm, that has happened before, or you are in an altered state of coming out of sleep or something else, whatever it is. I would love to hear from people who have had serious interactions with the praying mantis types, and if there are listeners, please email me, earthfiles@earthfiles.com, and you can always remember that as I'm a reporter who files news about the Earth. So it's earthfiles@earthfiles.com. And, George, it will be very interesting to see how many people do email or send hard letters about praying mantises that they've never told anyone before. I will be very interested.
Well, you don't ridicule, and that's what gets you some great information.
No, there's no reason for anybody to be ridiculed.
First-time caller, Mary Ellen in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. You're on with Linda. Go ahead, Mary.
Hi. Merry Christmas to both of you.
You too.
Thank you. The reason why I'm calling is I've been watching Ancient Aliens for all the seasons, and I was looking at the band of holes down in South America and trying to figure out how they were trying to communicate with us. And I was wondering if anybody had applied binary code to the band of holes.
It's a very good question. I'm not aware of anybody doing it, but I myself am coming to the conclusion that binary code and codes have been used all over the surface of this planet. I think that's what all of these patterns in the Middle East, Kazakhstan, Göbekli Tepe, I think they relate to some kind of use of patterns and symbols for what was described in the Dragonfly drone story in 2007 by the anonymous Isaac, that we are dealing with self-activating software. It is mathematical. It is done in diagrams and patterns and symbols. We humans are not capable of producing it. The scientists could not produce it. But that I think we're dealing with advanced intelligence that knows how to place circles and patterns all over any planet that they want in order to generate communication, energy, anything. They're the ones who know how to do it. We are the ones who mimic. We are the ones who observe. We are the ones that think that patterns in Peru are completely separate from patterns in Kazakhstan or in the Middle East or China. We are not global thinkers. The ETs work in global geometries.
What amazes you about Göbekli Tepe the most?
The feeling of alienness. I remember talking with you on Coast about standing there that morning as the sun came up and turning 180 degrees to see what the sun was doing to those pillars, and then walking down onto the ramps where I could get down close. And it was my very first moment to interact. And all of my life, where I've been all over the planet, I always get gut feelings about anything wherever I am. And when I was standing there in Göbekli Tepe with the sun behind me, it was the single most alien place I have ever been. There was nothing about it that registered, I know what this does, I know what it's for. And that's when Robert Schock, the geologist who did his PhD at Yale, came down and stood beside me and said, you know, Linda, from standing up above and looking down on the tops of these pillars, I kept being reminded of tuning forks because they're T-shaped and they're tall and they're thin. And he said, I wonder if this entire hill with all of these perhaps 200, 300 pillars in rings, circles, was made to vibrate or resonate with some kind of a frequency from above. And of course, what he was implying is if we are dealing with disks and technologies of an ET nature, then all of these rings of stone from Stonehenge to Göbekli Tepe, South Africa, all over the world, were made by intelligences who understand something about sizes and relationships, and limestone is like a crystal, and that they were made to resonate with frequencies of a technology that did something that we don't understand. And when you are there in Göbekli Tepe, the thing that hits you is, this doesn't feel human.
Not at all. Linda, you have yourself a great Christmas, and we'll talk to you in January. Breaking quick news, Pope Francis is recognizing Mother Teresa's miracles. She will become a saint. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasore, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.